This summer, don't just watch soccer. Play in the DraftKings Real Shot Challenge presented by Jägermeister. The rules of the game are simple. Just pick winners. At the end of the tournament, the five top point getters in each nation's leaderboard walk home with a national team jersey and a Jägermeister jacket. All entries are automatically entered into an overall leaderboard where the prizes are even more lucrative, like the ultimate fan experience, an all-expenses-paid trip to the winning team's country to celebrate sweet, sweet victory like a local. Enjoy a VIP soccer experience including game tickets, transportation, and swag, plus extra cash so you can roll like a Meister. You don't need cash to enter. It's free. So what are you waiting for? Head to DraftKings.com/RealShot to adopt your team, get in the game, and win exclusive prizes. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/RealShot for details. Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Brian Strauss and I will be coming to you every day from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by interview guest Andrei Arshavin, the best-known Russian player of the past decade, who tells some great stories about Euro 2008 glory, scoring four times at Liverpool for Arsenal, and his thoughts on Russia's chances in the tournament. Onward! Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. We are here in Moscow, Russia, and Brian Strauss and I are in the same room right now, Brian, which is kind of crazy. You just arrived literally today.
I did.
I've been here for, I think this is my fifth day. So thanks for answering the bell and making it to the recording of this podcast. How are you doing?
For those listeners who struggle a bit when I get incoherent or giggly, it's going to be a rough ride for the next 20-30 minutes or so. I'm a drooling puddle of gelatinous goo, Grant.
But you're here.
I'm here. I am physically present. My three-dimensional body is sitting in this room and holding a microphone, and let's see what happens.
And by the way, you're wearing a Washington Capitals t-shirt, and I should call it the NHL champion Washington Capitals. Congratulations.
Yeah, I've just been I've been kind of over the moon about it. It did, I must admit, and I hope our bosses aren't listening, it did impinge on my preparation for this trip just a little bit. And so I've been wearing the shirt now for a solid probably 50 hours, and nothing. I was hoping for some, you know, I don't mean like bear hugs, and I guess like in this country that could mean a few different things. I probably shouldn't have said that.
I thought there would be some Ovechkin fans here.
No one has said a word to me, and I've been walking around all day in this on the plane, walking around Moscow in this Caps shirt, and I'll wear it till it falls off. My credential photo. I look like Ovechkin right now in that I am. I haven't shaven in a long time. I look really, really sweaty and disoriented, and I'm wearing a red Capitals shirt. And so that's my credential photo.
Awesome.
I didn't think about that before I sort of rolled in to get my credential today. So I look like, you know, Ovechkin after he did the Stanley Cup keg stand in my credential photo. Yeah, maybe he'll be here. Maybe he'll roll. Maybe him and Kuznetsov and Orlov will bring the cup to Moscow while we're here. That would be cool. It is strange that I know I talk about hockey a lot, but you have to understand like soccer is by far my favorite sport. Obviously I grew up playing it, coached it, now I write about it, but the Caps are my favorite team because you and I are similar age. I mean, we grew up you know, after the NASL but before MLS, and there was no soccer team to cheer for when I was a kid, and so the Caps, it was like ice soccer, so that became my team. So I'm very excited. So let's talk about the World Cup.
The World Cup is here, man. And we're in Russia together. It's our first time in Russia.
It's crazy.
And first impressions. What are your first impressions of this place? You literally landed here like a couple hours ago.
I'm really freaking tired. it is like a lot of times, like a lot of World Cups, you kind of see the place where the World Cup is through the window of whatever vehicle you're traveling in, you know? So right. So far I've seen a bit of Moscow through some Ubers, Uber is surprising. The coverage here is pretty good. I'm kind of fired up about that. Through a couple subway windows. The city is astonishing. The city is...
It's gigantic.
Yeah, and it's... And monumental buildings. I mean, just there's the university that's across the... If you're listening and you Google Luzhniki Stadium, which is where the opener and the final is, across the river from Luzhniki, it's Moscow University, Moscow State University, right? And it's just a jaw-dropping building. And then there are multiple sort of iterations of that building, of that style, sprinkled throughout the city. And then, of course, along with the Kremlin, where you sort of can't miss it as you drive around. This place is King's Landing on steroids. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. And of course, you kind of want to get out and, like, you know, run around and take pictures of it and, you know, rub it. But, you know, I was Ubering to go get my credentials and all that kind of stuff today. So hopefully over the course of the next month, at some point, I'll be able to get out and take a picture.
We're both staying near in hotels awesome. Near Red Square.
Not far, yeah. The opposite and, sides of Red Square, kind of.
And so that means St. Basil's Cathedral, the Onion
Dome. I haven't seen that.
It's close by here, yeah. So you can walk from here and see it. That's where the Fox studio will be. I'll be working there during the tournament as well. It's beautiful.
Rumor has it that you did a little song and dance number this morning. I'm putting you on the spot now, totally.
About what?
With Fernando.
Oh, how do you know about that?
I'm a reporter. Sources.
Yeah. So Fox Sports, which is going to be your official broadcaster in English in the United States for the World Cup, had a media event today, which is always funny for me because I end up, like, none of the writers want to actually talk to me, which is fine for, like, a story, because I get it. They're like my friends, and it feels weird. So I just talk to guys and catch up and... But they introduced all of the Fox Sports talent and the hosts for World Cup shows. And Fernando Fiore.
I saw Gus Hiddink in the lobby just now.
He's working for Fox. Yeah, I have some pretty good Gus Hiddink cool. stories that I
can share. Is it Gus or Goose?
It's actually, I wondered, it's Gus. Everyone calls him Gus.
Gus. Word.
But really nice man. Obviously a star here in Russia where he was the national team coach. Took them to the semis of Euro 2008. Everywhere we go with Gus Hiddink here in Moscow, people want pictures with him. And he's pretty cool about it.
That's how I feel when I walk around with you.
But anyway, you brought up this thing. You brought this up, so I'm going to tell you the story now.
Yeah.
So Fernando Fiore, who's hosting World Cup tonight on Fox every night, literally every night during the World Cup, I wasn't ready for this. He asked me to come up with him on stage in front of everybody, and we have this bet because he saw that in Sports Illustrated, I have Argentina, his country, not advancing out of the group stage. And so the bet is that if Argentina does advance out of the group stage, I will have to wear a blue and white wig on TV that he will apparently supply. He travels around with these things.
Is he Carrot Top?
And
a trunk
if,
of stupid props.
And if Argentina does not advance from the group stage, per my prediction, Fernando will have to wear a Croatia tie that he has signed by Davor Šuker.
Oh, that's not that's. He should have to shave his head.
I was thinking either shave head shave mustache. Yeah. His mustache is sort of part
true.
Of his
that's
calling
the look.
Card.
That's the iconic thing.
But yeah, so I was not planning for that to happen, but it was fun. And. So that's part of what I've been doing. But also every morning, except for this one, when we were doing that, I've been going on runs around the area here. And it's a beautiful sort of central area here of Moscow down by the river with all the buildings and everything. So if you ever get a chance to go to Moscow, do it. It's and combine it probably with St. Petersburg.
Well, that's gonna end, right? I mean, we're gonna get started really, really fast here. I mean, I wish I had a few days to get acclimated. But, you know, starting tomorrow with the Congress. Today I went and got my credentials. By the way, best media perk ever at this World Cup. Phenomenal media perk. So this is my third World Cup that I'll be covering. And now, obviously, we don't do this for the perks, right? I mean, there are rarely perks. At South Africa, I don't think there were. I think maybe I got a chintzy, like, plastic iPhone case, like not one you'd ever actually use in South Africa.
So what do you get here?
And then in Brazil, the perks were the desk lamps.
What?
You remember the desk lamps?
What, at the media desk? In the stadium?
And in the stadium. Like, half of the Brazilian World Cup budget went toward desk lamps.
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Not necessary.
Every 6 inches,
sort of
there was a damn
space.
Desk lamp.
Right.
And then here, the media... Oh, and that, and the other perk in Brazil was credit card fraud. And then... everyone got some credit card fraud. And then the perk here, they give you, along with your tournament credential, like a Metro card. Good for the entire tournament. Yeah. That's really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, so I will be taking the Moscow Metro. It doesn't work in other cities, obviously, but and I'm going to be in at least one other city, but you'll have to stay tuned. And but yeah, I will be taking the Metro in Russia, in Moscow, courtesy of Uncle Vlad.
The Metro here is awesome, actually, compared to like New York and I presume Washington. It's relatively clean. It's got like museum piece type things in it. It's pretty cool. Though, interestingly, the Fox Sports security team says we can't take the Metro, which seems a little weird.
Why? Are you gonna ignore them and take the Metro?
I'm actually not needing to take it anywhere.
Well, that's true.
So.
You're just walking to and from the set. Yeah.
So yeah, but
it is vast, and it's like New York, for example. Like, yes, of course, it's better than the Pony Express is better than the DC Metro. But like today, I got on a line that forked, right? So, and I didn't know, and I wound up being on the train that forked left when I wanted to fork right. So you've got to backtrack. And when I went to Luzhniki to get my credential, I got off on the wrong stop, so wound up, you know, walking half a mile or three quarters of a mile to get back to where I should have been. But yeah, it's super safe. It's cool. And it works well, but it's definitely it's old, but in like a cool, quaint, historic sort of living museum kind of way. And it was really neat.
A lot of them have very deep staircases to get to.
Holy
and
shit,
that's because
yes.
They were supposed to double as bomb shelters. Yep. During the Cold War.
One of the steepest, one of the longest staircases I've ever been on, escalators.
So we're going to be doing this podcast literally every day.
With more substance, hopefully, less drooling as the tournament starts.
We're excited for at least a few of you to join us every day as we experience and talk about the World Cup. Now, obviously no soccer until Thursday. That's going to be Russia, Saudi Arabia, the big showdown between the two worst teams in this tournament. But there's another big day coming on Wednesday for the United States in particular. Since the U.S. is not involved in this World Cup on the field, we're going to find out if the united bid of the U.S., Mexico, and Canada either beats or loses to Morocco on Wednesday.
And is none of the above still technically an option?
Though everybody I talk to here says not likely at all.
I mean, who would do that? Who would? Because then we've got to go through this whole stupid thing again.
Right.
If you vote for none of the above, you're essentially saying, I haven't had enough World Cup bidding politics.
Right.
I want more World Cup bidding politics.
It should be a close vote, though, from what I'm hearing, between the united bid from North America and Morocco. And the fact that it could be a close vote is kind of crazy if you're looking at sort of rational thought. Like, I'm not standing for the U.S. here. I'm just saying that based on the proposals and not wanting to waste $16 billion on all new stadiums and infrastructure in Morocco that won't get used afterward, it seems to make sense facility-wise to come to North America.
I saw a Morocco bid billboard on the way in from Sheremetyevo Airport this morning, and I'm sure I apologize to our throng of Russian listeners for I watched Russian movies on the plane.
Why?
To prepare myself. I watched one movie about Nikolai Gogol being like a Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter type dude. And then I watched a movie about some medieval knight who killed the Mongol horde. So it was pretty exciting, and it got me fired up to defend the fatherland. We've talked about it before. I mean, you know, there are a few reasons an individual nation might vote for Morocco, right? One is not necessarily voting for Morocco, but voting against the united bid, read the United States, right?
Yeah.
For whatever political or moral or social reason. Another is the fact that if you are if you're a country that cares about relationships with broadcasters, and you are in Europe or Africa or Asia, you might rather have the World Cup played at a more convenient time than it would be if it was in the U.S., where games in the evening, if you remember, in 94, games were played at, you know, time suitable for the European market. And I can't imagine that would be the case again, right? They're not going to be playing games in June and July at 1 p.m.
I remember noon Eastern kickoffs in Orlando, insane. And it was like insane temperature and humidity.
And then the third reason is really cynical but true, which is that Morocco needs to build $16 billion worth of infrastructure, and there are companies that are going to get those contracts.
Which brings us to France, whose federation has already come out, their federation president, and said, not only are we going to support Morocco, presumably, people think, because of several of the reasons you just mentioned, but also because French banks, yep. French construction companies stand to make crazy money from $16 billion of infrastructure building. But also, the French president today said, I'm going to lobby as many of you as I can in UEFA to vote for Morocco. And think about this. The French killed the U.S. bid for 2022 when Michel Platini
voted for Qatar,
switched from the U.S. to Qatar and brought at least two or three or four votes on that executive committee with him, which swung the election in 2010, which caused Qatar to upset the U.S. Here are the French again. If the U.S.-led bid does lose, that would be one of the main reasons.
And so how does France lobby other countries around UEFA or other countries they have relationships with to vote for a bid that will get the French government and French industry and French contractors like sweetheart deals in Morocco? I guess.
Who knows?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, then you start talking about things that look shady. You start talking about subcontracts and kickbacks and things like that. You know, I brought this up a few times. You know, however you feel about Sunil Gulati, he was right. This is an election. This is an election, and people vote in elections for myriad reasons, often that don't follow any sort of logical or framework or even self-interest. So Carlos Cordero and his counterparts at the FMF and Canadian Soccer Association and Infantino, who obviously wants this World Cup in North America, they're going to have to convince the voters that the revenue difference by having the World Cup in the U.S., Canada, Mexico is worth their while.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what it's going to come down to.
You will have
more money in your pockets if we host the World Cup in North America. That's all it is.
I've had so many people here in Moscow ask me, what are the percentage chances that the USA-led bid wins? And I'm like, nobody knows. You know, like, I'm not asking literally every country. Certainly some countries have come out and announced some things that you can't ever really know until the vote takes place. The New York Times has a tracker of countries that have announced one way or the other. But I sort of put it at around 65% chance that the USA-led bid
that seems reasonable. Yeah.
Wins. But yeah. I also would have given an even higher number on the day back in 2010 when I was in Zurich when Qatar beat the U.S. bid. So take it for what you will.
Is this going to be the most boring thing I've ever covered in my... Well, actually...
It's FIFA politics.
MLS drafts are pretty tough. I mean, if you follow college soccer, if you're like Travis Clark or one of those dudes, the MLS draft is like, you know, candy store. But yeah, that's a tough haul. But this is going to be pretty boring tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on my experience covering these types of events.
Is it secret ballot?
It's not a secret ballot.
But are they announced real time? Andorra votes for, and then
it'll be an electronic vote that will register on the screen in front of everybody who's there, just the numbers, and then later the individual country by country votes will be publicized. But I found interesting from talking to Cordero the other day.
It'll be like the FIFA Player of the Year, where we find out like that the head coach of the Thai women's national team voted Mia Hamm Player of the Year 20 years after she stopped playing.
Correct.
Yeah.
But what I would say also is this came up in when we spoke to Carlos Cordero a couple days ago, which is that he thought that it actually might hurt the U.S. to an extent, because in Africa, for example, if you're an African country that chooses to buck the block vote and vote for the U.S., because it's being publicized, you might not do it. He thinks actually if this were a secret ballot, that more votes from Africa to the U.S.-led bid might actually come in.
And why would an African team vote for the U.S.? For the revenue reasons I mentioned earlier or something else?
I think there's some political stuff here, too, because I think South Africa's turned around and decided to vote for the U.S.-led bid. Liberia, it's not that many countries, mostly English-speaking African countries.
And Africa is kind of an odd construct, right? Because North Africa is very different
sure.
in every way than from sub-Saharan Africa, right? So maybe don't feel certain sorts of kinship, economic, culturally, socially, ethnically, et cetera. So
when it comes down to it, this is either going to be a big day for U.S. soccer, and you'll now be able to point 8 years ahead and prepare for another World Cup in the United States. 60 of the 80 games would be in the United States, and every game from the quarterfinals on. Or if the U.S.-led bid loses, this will be yet another giant kick in the teeth for U.S. soccer after failing to qualify for the World Cup here, and that would be pretty massive.
So how does this – so you mentioned Cordero. So I guess you were here. I wasn't here yet, but he did a sort of a roundtable, right, with
yeah.
some of the guys who came already. You know, he inherited this bid, obviously. I mean, this was well in motion before he won the election. But at the same time – you know, it's weird to say he's put every egg in this basket, because no matter what happens tomorrow, he still has 3.5 years left on his term. But you know, he's put everything into this. And there are people in other parts of American soccer, the other constituencies, God, I'm so jet lagged, I can't even speak, who are really frustrated by the fact that Cordero hasn't sort of started listening to them and paid attention to them, because he's, how many countries did he say he's been to? Didn't he throw out a number?
He didn't throw out a number. He said that he's spoken to the bid itself. Mm-hmm. The three presidents have spoken to 150 or
okay.
so.
I mean, I will say that I have checked in. I have checked in with U.S. soccer every few days for the past month or so, working on a couple things. And they are in a different country every single time I get a text back.
No, Cordero has spent like one day in the U.S. in the last like... I don't know if it's like 8 weeks,
so
10 weeks.
So not a compliment or a criticism, but just a point that he clearly has put since the day he won that election in Orlando, he's put everything into this. So to what extent does failure or success tomorrow sort of reflect on him and his mandate and the rest of his term? I'm sort of asking rhetorically. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think it would be a massive loss if... this bid doesn't get it.
But does it undermine his term? I mean, is it so devastating? Is it such a...
Maybe. I mean, like, it's kind of hard to know. I mean, what I would say is that it's sort of fascinating to me from a personality perspective here. The idea of a shared World Cup 26 was the baby of Sunil Gulati, who never expected to not be the U.S. soccer president at this point in time. And Gulati is still on the FIFA council, the board of FIFA, through 2021. It's like 3 more years. And yet it's almost as if he's been totally marginalized from this, to the point where when U.S. Soccer had Cordero speaking to media here a couple nights ago, Gulati was nowhere to be found. U.S. Soccer is not putting Sunil Gulati out there anywhere. And yet this was his idea. He was the sole leader of the bid for a long time. And then that was yanked away so that it would be a three-person head of the Federation presidents of not just the U.S., but Mexico and Canada, which I think was a smart thing to do, because...
There was skepticism about how united this bid really was and whether the
right.
Canadian and Mexican participation was just kind of the window dressing and it wasn't really substantive. So.
The feeling was that basically a U.S.-only bid was not going to win. And so that's why Mexico and Canada have been brought on, and now it looks kind of smart. But we'll see what happens. We have a couple more things to talk about before we sign off here. Andre Arshavin, by the way, is going to be coming on as an interview here in the latter part of the podcast. We talk about Russia.
He's not currently in the room.
He is not.
That I can see.
True.
Your room, first of all, your room has some lovely artwork. And second, one of the walls is entirely slanty. It's very funhousey.
I feel like I'm in a Swiss chalet here on this, I think it's the sixth floor of my hotel. But it's not the biggest room, but it's by far the best room I've ever had at a World Cup. Like, and I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's gorgeous. It's nice. We stayed in some funky places in Brazil.
Yeah, much less funky here.
Yeah.
But a couple of stories I'll share about Russia here, because everyone is excited for Russia's first game. And nervous, I think, that they're the home team, like Russians, that the home team won't advance from the group. But Valery Karpin, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, former Russian player, appeared at Moscow State University yesterday in front of a bunch of students. I talked to a person who was there, and when this panel was asked who's going to win the World Cup, he said Russia. And
it's been arranged.
And and the students,
and they threw beats at him.
But here's the funny: the students there all laughed when he said this, and he was actually joking too. And so there's a lot of pessimism, I think, about this Russian team right now.
Well, that sounds but that sounds almost like just kind of goofy self-deprecation in a way, you know.
I mean, it was. Yeah. But it was amusing nonetheless.
Well, and I wonder, you know, they've obviously had, you know, what, 7 years, right? I mean, this was December of 2010 that this was announced. So they've had 7 years to kind of build up. I mean, you know, guys who were, you know, 16, 17 years old back then, 15 years old back then, or, you know, the core of their national team. It also makes me wonder what Qatar will have on the field in 4 years, whether they can wrangle, you know, marry off enough Brazilians to Qatari women to get them citizenship to field a competitive national team. Well, I'm going to get some hate mail for that. I'm sorry. Jet lag. They got in a cake group, right? And so it's there for them. As much as we laud Mo Salah justifiably and rightly, you know, there are questions about the team that's surrounding him. This is not a team that's been, you know, who knows what kind of stage fright or you know, sort of big game nerves Egypt will feel playing in the World Cup for the first time in so long. They've had themselves a little media distraction this week. We'll see how they handle that. A World Cup's always more fun when the host team does well. You know, I mean, one of my best memories of South Africa was just, I mean, vuvuzelas are excruciating. They're the worst. But there was still something kind of cool about hearing them around the city when the team was playing, hearing them outside the hotels, hearing them in the streets. There was something about that sound just for those few weeks that fit. And I never want to hear it again, but it was cool. And then, of course, what even better was there were a few nights in Brazil. I think I went to only one game, one Brazil game in Brazil, maybe two. But other times, like I was in the hotel working or watching on TV and Brazil would score. When we were at the U.S., we were at U.S. training when they were playing Chile in the round of 16, I think, right? And went to penalties. Yeah. And each time Brazil would score a penalty, you would hear fireworks and God knows what else going off around you in sort of the, you know, the concrete jungle, the high rises around you in Sao Paulo, sort of a real time, the city announcing real time how the team was doing. And that was spectacular. And I don't know what the analogy here will be, but I hope it's something, because that's a really neat part about being in a World Cup.
Yeah, I agree. Today, by the way, Tuesday is Russia Day. So I'm told that there might actually be fireworks here tonight. You will be probably sleeping by then in an attempt to catch up a little bit.
I'm going to be passed out on a sidewalk. There's no question about it.
Everyone who's listening out there, let's give Brian Strauss a round of applause for answering the bell and coming here just a couple hours after landing to record this podcast. Let's wrap it up now. We'll be back every day of this tournament. The interview section comes next with Andre Arshavin. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Our guest today is the best-known Russian soccer player of the past decade. Andrei Arshavin led Russia to the Euro 2008 semifinals and played for Arsenal and Zenit St. Petersburg in a terrific club career, among others. Andrei, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Andrei, we're here at a Nike event in Gorky Park with you and Brazilian Ronaldo. The World Cup is starting in your country. What does it feel like for you to see the World Cup happening in Russia?
I still can't believe because, you know, when I was young, you know, I never thought it could happen in my country, you know, because always when I was young, I thought it's happened somewhere else, you know, not it can happen just, you know, next door.
The first game of the tournament is Russia-Saudi Arabia. The Russian team has some questions about it. What do you think are the most important things that Russia needs to do to beat Saudi Arabia?
I think to beat Saudi Arabia, we only have to show the our level, my opinion. I don't think that Saudi Arabia is a very strong team, my opinion. But I did not see them a lot, you know. I just heard apparently they play not bad, apparently.
Against Germany, I guess they played okay.
And also against Italy, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's very important to make good start, and I think everyone understands this in our team.
Who do you think, in your opinion, are the most important Russian players in this tournament, and why?
My opinion, it's going to be Golovin and Smolov, because he scores a lot of goals, at least in Russian league, and also he's able to score in high level. And also Golovin, he's a player who can create a lot of opportunities for other players. Also, he can also shoot from long distance. And, you know, basically the game's created around him. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of depends on Akinfeev, because he's our best keeper. I don't know, he's been our best player for last 10 years, maybe more. That's it.
I remember Akinfeev from your 2008 Euro team that got to the semifinals, which
yes.
was a fantastic, fun team to watch. What is your favorite memory of that tournament?
It's difficult to say, you know, because it's difficult to describe the feeling we feel. We were feeling wild the World Cup, you know, because also nobody believed in us. But we started to play well, you know, and enjoy every training, every seconds while, I don't know, dinner, lunch, to stay together. And as long as we went through, you know, we are getting even stronger. We are feeling they are getting stronger and stronger. And unfortunately, in semifinal, we played against, incredible Spain, you know.
Yeah. I'm working with Gus Hiddink for USA Television in this tournament, and I've gotten to know him a little bit. What was so special about him as a coach of that team?
You know, when he took the national team, he tried to change our mind, you know. I remember there was one of the first meeting, and he said, "Hey, guys, you are best player I have ever had before, you know." And I'm sure nobody believed in that, but as long as we start to work together, you know, he gave us freedom, you know. We could do whatever we want a part of a football pitch, you know, and we could, I don't know, eat whatever we want. He gives the players freedom, which most of the players never seen before, except Zenit players, because we worked with European coach before mm-hmm. the Hiddink. I would say this was one of the main things he brought in the team.
So, in your opinion, what happened, I guess, between 2008 to the Russian national team and the Russian national team today? It's not quite at the level that it was before.
You know, it's difficult to say and to estimate this. Everyone now says, you know, the team is much worse than we were in 2008. Generation is not like Vivio, but you know, as I answered in previous question, even in 2008 nobody believed in us. And you know, in 2 weeks Vivio qualify, and you will see in the street everyone will say, "Hey, now it's the best team, best player. Arshavin was fucking shit," and something like this, you know. And now we have like proper one.
And
everything changes for 1 second in football. For one goal, changed everything. History, I don't know, the судьба, как сказать.
Destiny.
Yeah.
Destiny, they changed destiny for everyone, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so you're predicting that Russia will advance from the group?
I hope so, you know, and this is for sure.
Okay.
We must do it.
Okay, just a couple more questions here. I really appreciate it. In 2009, you famously scored 4 goals for Arsenal at Liverpool in a classic 4-4 game, and you held up 4 fingers after the 4th. What do you remember the most about that game?
When, you know, straight after each 3rd, 4th goals, I could not believe it it could happen with me, you know, because people who were born in the Soviet Union could not believe even they can go abroad, you know. And here now at Anfield, you know, he's one of a historical stadium even in England, you know, and the Russian small guy scored 4 goals. I could not believe it. It was my feeling after the goals. After the game, I can't see, you know, I felt something special, or I just went home, you know, I was just enjoying my family, and nothing happened special after the day, next day after the game. Only, you know, I was, obviously, I was on the main channel, you know, main programs, you know, which is normally says in about politics, and instead of that, they just showed these 4 goals. The only difference was that.
When people take their picture with you, do they often hold up the 4 fingers?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, now I remembered only like a person who scored 4 goals in England.
You're still playing these days in Kazakhstan for the club.
It's incredible also.
Do you still love the sport? Do you love to play the sport?
No, I always, while my career, I always loved football, loved to play, just loved to play. I was lucky that this has helped me earn money also, you know.
Sure.
That's why I'm happy man, I can say about myself, yes, which I can earn money, which I love to do.
Andrea Chauvin, thanks so much for speaking to me.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Andre Arshavin, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.